Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, talking about the Supermax quarterback. What do I mean by that? This little strategy session on some quarterback team building that I've been thinking about and I've actually executed. I'm not going to do a full draft review or anything like that, but wanted to sort of think about this in a little bit bigger context in terms of just strategically here about some of the things I'm thinking about with the position. So I do think that there is a class of quarterbacks, and it can vary by size. I have three. I think that you could make an argument that maybe it should be four. Some people might have eight. I think it's three. I think it's Mahomes, who I think's in a tier of himself. I think it's Deshaun Watson. And then I think it's Dak Prescott. And after that, in terms of the priority stack of the position up, after that, I think there's a tier break. And there's a variety of different reasons. And I think each person has a different case about what they offer in terms of potentially being one of the top guys, one of the elite tiers, what I call the supermax quarterback. And I use that, I steal that phrase from basketball, thinking about quarterbacks who are NBA players who basically qualify for the highest contract. And that's, there's some certain qualifications that you have to have and accomplishments and, all NBA and all these things. But yeah, I mean, that's the level, right? That's the LeBron James, the Giannis, right? That level. So I call it the supermax contract for quarterbacks. We don't really have that, but that's really the these long term guys, those elite guys. And I think that there's right now in terms of the mix, it's Mahomes, it's Watson, it is Dak as well, and then you sort of get into a different tier. You get into like each of these guys have a different debate and argument. Josh Allen is last year a fluke. Are you buying high? Almost assuredly so, but what's his floor look like from here? Is Lamar Jackson a long-term starter? Is he a franchise quarterback? Kyler Murray, what's his situation with him as a passer? Justin Herbert, is it 1 year or where are we going from here? 101, we've talked ad nauseum about that. Joe Burrow, there's questions there. Russell Wilson, I think he's got the best argument to be up in that tier over the next 5 years. And then you got Rodgers, and after that it goes down another tier. When you look at the board this year, it is the least penal to trade up for one of these guys that I have ever seen. So what do I mean by that? Well, to move up in the draft and get a top quarterback, you're paying no price if done right. You're obviously paying picks, but in terms of profiles, we're whistling past the graveyard. So I'll use an example of what I did this past week in a league that I'm in. Startup draft, I drew 102, and I knew Dak Prescott would go, or I knew that Patrick Mahomes would go one. And so I tried to actually make a trade up for number one. I had a couple of criteria in mind. I said basically that I would do, I would include it my second and third round startup pick. I needed to get back a pick in the mid round, so that'd be the sixth, seventh, eighth round, somewhere in there. My preference was sixth and seven, and I wasn't going to give up a future first. Outside of that, I would have made up, I could have figured out a way to make a deal through that and been at the top of the market to move up to get Mahomes. Right? That deal never came to fruition. But I sort of got, I got to two, I took Dak Prescott, and then I tried to come back up again. I said, listen, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try something new, try something I've never done before, which is trade up in a startup draft and go ahead and get two quarterbacks. I'm going to try a different team build. Is this the optimized team build? Well, I think it's interesting because when you look at the analytics build, when you look at the AOD research, when you look at that stuff, there's a pretty it's like a gradual decline historically from quarterbacks in, say, like the second or third round of Superflex draft through like the seventh. Problem is, there's no one there this year. And the guys that are there this year don't look like they do in the past. These aren't the Jared Goffs that have a couple years of security and good offenses, or Matt Ryan, who's got a couple years of security, or you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, right? You know, landmines to avoid. You got Baker in there. What's his contract? You've got Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold. What's their contract look like? How long is their leash? You know, what's guys like Jameis Winston and Mariota might have been in there in years past. They're not right now. And you sort of look, it's the usable quarterbacks, the guys that have the top six finish and that have some longevity in front of them, it is more limited. You do not have the Breeze, the Rivers, the Ben, the Brady's. You know, you still have Ben and Brady, but that group has been shrunk. And as a result, we have to play it differently. The market is reacting. I don't think they're per se reacting to that. They're not thinking like we are. They're thinking in a different way, which is you can lock these guys in. There's not a ton of competition for receivers, right? So if you're looking at kind of a long-term build, you'd either take a quarterback or receiver early in a startup draft. And so the receivers don't look that great from an age perspective with Devontae Adams and Hopkins and some of these guys. You do have some up-and-coming guys, but there's not like a clear one that's like 24 years old. And so you sort of get that problem. And so that's kind of, it's a combination of factors. It's causing quarterbacks to go off very early. We're getting, you know, 8, 9, 10 of them in the first round. I'll just point you to the RDP. You can find it on the site. And by the way, this stuff is great. And I, you know, I'm obviously touting my own product. So, you know, take it from the source, but just go in and look at this. Like, you can sort by the month. We've got 14 drafts that have taken place in the month of March. I'm recording this on March 16th, so we're getting one a day. I mean, that is just it's crushing anything that any ADP is getting. We already have the ADP that came out this month is already stale, and we have 14 drafts that are taking place just this month. That's not biased. It's not biased by any you know, systemic bias of a website doing it of their own subscribers. And so, yeah, you've got, or, you know, people doing, participate in five of them, right? You have that problem too. But anyways, I'll get off my soapbox. This stuff is great. You could sort of see where these guys are going. I've used this. I crushed my draft because I knew I could get to certain numbers and be fine. And so this is one of the things, right? With this decision, this is what I was facing. Okay, I was staring down the barrel of, hey, if I don't go quarterback at 102, I am probably not getting someone on the comeback at 210. So I have to, if I want a quarterback, I have to do it. I have to bite the bullet and go at 102. And so that's what I did with Dak. And then again, I was looking at 210 and said, I can't do a double stack. I have to go now because Rodgers is the last person off the board at 205. And then there's like a three-round gap or two-round gap. So that's really where I sat, and it's all this data, and it's great. So it's all tight end premium, super flex data. You're just going to be able to crush with it. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it. So, again, when you look at this, I'm sitting here. I'm at 102. I take my guy, which is Dak. I get to 104, and the offer kicked around was basically I was going to give up a second and a third and get the 104, and in return, I was going to get a pick. You know, I was shooting for a sixth. That was my goal, and it would have been a late sixth, and that was my initial sort of salvo out the door, because I knew if I took a round bump back, if their negotiation was, hey, an eighth, I knew if I slide to the seventh, I'm actually getting much closer to what I want. And so that's kind of where I started with, because the sixth would be late, the seventh would be early, and then the eighth would be late, so that you know, on paper, oh, it's a, you're just bumping up around from like the eighth to the seventh, but really in reality, you're getting up into a whole new tier. And so that's what I did. And I'll tell you, when I was doing it, I said to myself, I'm probably going to be like, there's a really, really, really good chance that I'm going to look at either Amari Cooper or Mike Evans with that pick. Like, there's an out, like a very high probability that that is going to happen. And so when you look at the RDP, Mike Evans, 6'12", Amari Cooper, 7'02". And those are medians. So that's basically half going before, half going after. I was sitting dead red with not, I'm not going to say it was a guarantee that I was going to get one of those guys, but I was probably going to get a crack at one of them. And I had a late sixth that was my own. So I'm stacking another pick in there. I could double hit it. And so that was really the thing that I said is, you know, this is a really, really valuable opportunity. So that's what I really pounced on and did it. And so I ultimately gave what would be 210 and 211 and 302 for the 104. And the what ended up being the 704. So I basically got in that tier. We went back. I offered a sixth. He offered an eighth. Said he wasn't going to take anything less than an eighth. You know, give anything more than an eighth. He wasn't going to do, right? That was basically his bottom line. I rejected, and he sent back that he'd give me the seventh, which is exactly what I wanted. So when you go back and look at it now, you put the players to it, and it's, again, is that an outlier deal? Yes. I've talked to other people who've had to give a future first. They went from the fourth round. I would much rather give a third this year than a fourth plus future assets. Like, fine, take the third because you're not paying any, it's not penal. It is not penalizing to you. You got to be careful when you use the word penal on a podcast because that can go bad. So, but yes, penalizing. So when you look, if you were to say, you know, let's just play this out, and this is, you know, who knows if the board would have turned out exactly like this, but at my pick at 211, had I not traded the pick, I'm staring down the barrel of Jalen Hurts just went just in front of me. So that you got that, I wouldn't have been in on that, but you're already looking at Matthew Stafford's the next quarterback off the board at 309, right? Would I rather take Matthew Stafford at 211, or would I rather take Deshaun Watson at 104? Like, there's not, that's a clear answer to me. And then, so when you look at it, the other guys that would have been in this range that I would have taken, so let's assume I went quarterback and took Stafford in there. I would have been looking at someone like Kamara. I would have been looking at, you know, Najee Harris was there. A.J. Brown was there. Gibson, Dobbins are in that range as well. Devontae Adams was probably who I would have selected if I'm looking at it. So we would have taken Devontae Adams and Matthew Stafford. All right, we'll call it that. With the picks that I got later on, you know, I would have taken, you know, if it was just 6'11", I would have taken Amari Cooper. And it would have been Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson for Matthew Stafford and Devontae Adams. That's, to me, a pretty clear answer on how to go. And this is a... this is all to do with where the wide receivers are going. This isn't a gap that you've seen in prior years. There is no gap from, right? There is a gap between Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper, but it is not the gap of going historically in that range. If you were to go from the second to the seventh, that's a 30 wide receiver gap. That's what you're looking at, and that's a huge deal. This year, it's not. Quarterbacks are going very early. You're getting a lot of running backs up here. It is not penalizing to go back into that range. He's wide receiver 19. Amari Cooper is wide receiver 19. Evans is wide receiver 20. Allen Robinson's in that range. So is Kenny Galladay. But when you look at it, Keenan Allen's even later. Juju Smith's even later than that, a round later. You're getting into the eighth round. I could have taken that eighth round and been fine with it. You know, and ultimately, there was a tier break kind of at the end of it. So maybe I was on the right side of that tier break, but it would have been Keenan Allen and Juju Smith-Schuster as the tier breaks. I mean, yeah, that's that to me, there's not a penalty to go down. And there's a big gain in terms of longevity, in terms of high-end elite upside. Like, I do think Stafford has high upside, but it's probably more of like a it happens for 1 year type of deal. Or like for him to sort of hit a Deshaun Watson level over the next 5 years, you know, maybe four of the best years are out of Watson. And heck, maybe one or two of them is out of Matthew Stafford. But, you know, at that point, I'm still ahead on the way ahead on the age curve. I'm locked in with a guy that is in on at this point looks a lot like a Hall of Fame pace to start his career. And he hasn't even played on his extension yet. So all of that is there's no real downgrade as long as you do it right. So I heard someone else do a very similar trade earlier this week. I was on a podcast and they talked about it. And that's, you know, I think something very, very doable. So I don't think the gap between, you know, round three and round six, round seven is all that much, especially when you're looking at profiles and the way that we target them. Are you going to miss out on some sex appeal? Are you going to miss out on taking CeeDee Lamb at wide receiver eight? Yeah. But you're going to get his wide receiver one that's playing ahead of him three rounds later. And we can definitely get on board with that. So, yeah, so that's really the thought process behind it. I do think there's value to go up and get these guys. You know, and I've done some trades for them too. You know, I did a Mahomes trade, and I don't think that the cost is too much. I have a hard time with the cost being, you know, when, and just think about this, when, if you look back on this deal in 3 years, how are you going to think? And I did this with the Dak Prescott deal that I made in a league that is probably going to cost me the opportunity to compete. It definitely did last year because I didn't have any running backs. And it hurts this year too, because I got to figure out, like, I was middle of the pack without Dak, and now I got to kind of figure out how to replenish those running backs. But I could do it with volume. I could figure it out. But I traded for Patrick Mahomes in a Superflex league. And when, you know, I look at it, and it's tough for me not to, it's tough to say what I wouldn't give up for him. And it's just a really, really big time opportunity, because you're getting a guy that is, I think, perhaps the best super flex asset we've had since the format's been in play, given what his history is and all of that. I mean, I gave up in the deal. I gave up Stafford, Mike Evans, and Juju Smith-Schuster for Patrick Mahomes. Let's just use the RDP for a second. I gave up and I got Gus Edwards back. So let's just use the RDP for a second. Just see what we're talking about. I got 101. I gave up 311. I gave up 311. I gave up 612. And I gave up a little bit later than that as well with Juju, 804. Like, I would absolutely do that. It didn't cost me a top 36 asset. Again, we could sort of say, hey, we've got Evans, we've got some of these guys ranked higher. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the market value of which I gave up, I absolutely would take Mahomes, and I would do it again. So that's really the thing I would think with all of this is, you know, there's some really good opportunity here for these quarterbacks. And, you know, just thinking about ways to sort of put these deals together, thinking about it in different ways. It's much tougher to pay from a roster construction perspective in an existing league, but to go up and do it in a startup draft, especially if you're not paying future assets, which I'm pretty loath to do. I hate the New Orleans Saints model. I hate being in future debt on picks or on assets just because it limits my options and some of the stuff that I might want to do. You know, now you look at it and you're like, all right, I haven't done that with this, and I've got plenty of options, and I'm opening up a multiple way go. I talked about this in the Analytics of Dynasty in 2020. There's a two way go, which is you can draft some youth stuff here, but if you sort of focused on the wide receivers who have been productive, and you can sort of get future picks in the process, like, you can really open up multiple avenues on competing. The quarterbacks allow you to do that, right? There's so many answers. You have so many answers in terms of options, right? I can play, you know, I could play this year. I could sort of play some moderate term wide receivers, guys that are in their mid to late 20s, who yeah, maybe they're not necessarily ascending assets, but still in prime productive windows. And I can sort of see 2 to 3 years of production out of them. And I can figure out ways to backfill because I'm not going to have a need at quarterback, most likely. And I can sort of, you know, if I do have a high pick or if I inherit a high pick or somehow trip and fall into a high pick, I can really extract assets through that and a move down to sort of backfill my roster. All of those things are possible. If my season doesn't go well, I'll never not probably not going to be in a position where I need to address the quarterback position because I have a guy that is on the big long contract that is still in his mid-20s. There's so it opens up so many avenues for you. So I think starting that way, and it gives you, it allows you to purely go best player. I think a lot of times in that, you know, in the mid rounds, we'll call it, you know, in the teens, you do have the option of guys like Melvin Gordon, of guys like David Johnson are going in, you know, 10th, 11th round in some of these drafts that I've been in. Adding those guys onto win now quarterbacks at that cost, like that's brilliant. And you're really opening up some upside. And, you know, if they play 1 year and then age out, like you've already well surpassed your expectation from that pick. And you still have options, right? You still have a really strong core that are going to get you there. I was looking at some of these, you know, some of the quarterback scoring from safe leagues, for example, just last year. And when you take and look at, you know, when you look at a guy like Deshaun Watson, he averaged 26 points. When you look at, Dak was obviously didn't play a whole season. So, he was up at 29 points, right? So let's say, you know, that was only five games that he played. He was hurt in the fifth one. But when you look at a couple of these top quarterbacks, you look at Deshaun Watson, 26 points, Russell Wilson, 26 points, Murray, 26 points. You add those two up, you're at 50. Right, you're above 50 already, and you know that's assuming, you know, that's not even that's, you add that up, and again, that's 12 times that's 12 times 50, right? Because they're going to play two games, they're each going to have a bye, so they're only going to play 12 games in a 13 game regular season. That's 600 points. When you look at some of the scoring in these, and again, that's not including your bye week fill-ins for these guys, right? So if you can get another 50 points out of the fill-in weeks there, you're already at 650 at your quarterback position. To get into the playoffs in some of these leagues, it's like you need 1,900 points. You're already almost a third of the way there. And that's with, right, if you're starting 10, 11 guys, you're well ahead of the pace. You're just locking in a really, really strong really, really strong floor and some ceiling there and giving yourself a lot of options. So you're basically a third of the way to a playoff bid with basically 20% of your roster. And when you think about that, that's a huge start and a really, really high floor. So that's really the thing I would think about, you know, try and figure out a way, you know, explore the market. Because these things can be very liberating. This year is a year where I think that there is value in sort of double dipping early in the position, but being selective. You know, there's only 4 or 5 guys I want to do it with that I feel really, really good about. And, you know, if you get the opportunity to do it, I don't think I'm going to look back and regret that deal in a couple of years, right? I think that any chance that my regret would be is that I didn't do it. So that's really the angle that I would have. Again, I'm not a huge guy in terms of trading up in drafts, but I do think you do it, right? You pay the price for one of those elite quarterbacks because of the flexibility, the power, the upside, and the floor that it gives you. It's a really unique asset. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode, the Supermax Quarterbacks. Until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.